Texas Business Minds, a presentation of the Business Journals of Texas. Brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies build a stronger, safer Texas. And by the Spring Branch District. Be a part of the heart of Houston in Spring Branch. In this episode, Houston Business Journal reporter Naomi Kling goes one-on-one with Phillips 66 President and CEO Mark Leisure to learn more about the future of energy and his company's plans to diversify.
I'd love to hear just from your perspective how you really got into the business and what it means to you working in oil and gas.
Oh, absolutely. I have a PhD in chemical engineering. Mm-hmm. I joined Phillips Petroleum in 1989 as a research engineer. I really thought I'd spend my entire career doing research and development. I was a catalyst expert and had the good fortune of working on a lot of exciting projects, and then had the opportunity to go experience life in one of our facilities down at Sweeney, Texas. And it just really opened my mind to how we create value beyond just the technology. Technology is really important, and I love it, and there's still a big part of my brain that has a great affinity for that. But I got to see the actual processes, the equipment, the people that make things work for this company that create value. And that led me to commercial jobs, where I got to then really make sure we had all the elements we needed to bring that value back to the company from the marketplace and to negotiate things. And then I got a flavor of international experience and ended up going to Singapore for 6 years. And so that's the beauty of working for a great company like this, the opportunities you get afforded in your career and how it gives you a picture really about why companies like ours exist and what the mission is and how you create value and how you deliver value for your shareholders. We're not ashamed of the fact that we need to be profitable. We're not ashamed of the fact that we have to deliver returns to shareholders, because that's what makes the entire system work. We're out there to compete against great companies, and that competition makes us all better. And that's better for the consumers, that's better for the economy, that's better for the world. And it really drives into our overarching mission is to provide energy and improve lives. And that is incredibly important to me. When I came back to Phillips 66 from CP Chem in 2021, I thought, well, that's kind of a nice slogan. It really is so much more than a slogan. It has really become part of who I am and how I think, and it permeates this entire company. And that's where everything we do starts, with that mission in mind, is to provide energy and improve lives. And we know that over time, the kinds of energies that we'll be providing will have to evolve, and it's been evolving for hundreds of years and will continue to evolve into the future. And we know that people's lives really are impacted by their ability to access clean and affordable energy. And so that's where the improved life piece comes in. And we, you know, we're recruiting employees and they want to know, you know, what they can do to save the world. And we say, get into the energy business. That's how you can save the world, because the world needs energy. And we have to get better at it every day. And that's what we're committed to do. And so that's what makes it all work for me.
Mm-hmm. In the last 5 years or so, what would you say is the biggest change in your own personal mindset when it comes to your leadership position?
Well, 5 years ago, I was at CP Chem and I was intensely focused on making that a successful company. And coming back to Phillips 66, the whole energy transition came more into focus for me. In fact, that was one of the attractions for me coming back to Phillips 66, was how to help guide a great company like this through the energy transition and how to make the right decisions. You know, the world knows that we need to change what we're doing, but the world has expectations around how quickly things could happen and should happen and what really can happen. Mm-hmm. The world consumes 102 million barrels of oil and oil equivalents a day. It's not going to go away overnight without pretty devastating effects on economies and on humanity. And so how do you sit down and use the fundamentals of physics and chemistry and economics to make it all work, to make sure that we're having the least impact on the environment we can, but putting the best solutions out there for people in a way that they can afford to drive to work? Whatever energy they're using to get to work, it's still affordable, so they can get to work. So the groceries still show up on the shelves, so kids can still go to school and have access to clean water. How does that system work as we move to different forms of energy? That was a big motivator for me.
You mentioned a big part of it was making those right decisions, mm-hmm, in the energy transition. What would you say are some of the decisions that's important for Phillips 66 in moving forward in the energy transition, especially in reducing emissions or kind of meeting some of these climate goals?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important for us to focus on reducing the carbon intensity of everything that we do. We run big refineries, CPChem runs big petrochemical plants, we transport hydrocarbons on pipeline systems, we gather gas and liquids out in the oil basins and process that. You know, we need to be focused every day on how we keep things in the pipe. It's smart to do from a safety perspective, it's smart to do from a carbon perspective as well. And then we've got to look at each of our facilities and understand how we can reduce the carbon intensity of the fuels that we provide you. Can we access electricity that's renewable? Can we use wind power, solar power? And we do. We would love to use lower carbon intensity electrons to lower the carbon intensity of those liquids that you use every day that are really very safe and high energy density that you can put in a tank of gas and move yourself from point A to point B without really thinking about it other than watching that fuel gauge. And how can we lower that as an immediate step and then start thinking about what are the energies of the future that we can start to work on that actually still provide a return for our investors? Because if we're putting money into things that doesn't create value, we'll go out of business and we won't be able to provide the solutions of the future. So it's that balance. And so where that starts for us, we're into transportation fuels. We produce gasoline, diesel, jet fuel. And how do we start making those same products, fitting that same marketplace and lower the carbon intensity? Today, we're very close to starting up one of the world's largest renewable diesel facilities in San Francisco, our Rodeo Renewed project. And it will take things like animal fats and used cooking oil and turn it into very clean diesel fuel. And the carbon intensity of those feedstocks is a fraction of the carbon intensity of traditional crude oil. And so we're lowering our carbon footprint of that facility, and we're lowering the carbon intensity of the vehicles that use that renewable diesel and the sustainable aviation fuel that will come out of it. And when you think about the opportunity around particularly sustainable aviation fuel, it's very, very difficult to have something that has the energy density of jet fuel and allows people to travel on transatlantic, transpacific flights, transcontinental flights, long distances. How do you replace that energy density with hydrogen or with batteries? It's nearly impossible. You can do it and fly maybe 150 miles, 100 miles on battery-powered planes, but you can't go 3, 4, 5, 6,000 miles. And so what we're focused on are technologies that can use some of these renewable feedstock sources to produce liquids that can be used to transport people around the planet.
I'm curious, are there any technologies that are lower carbon or kind of considered within the energy transition that Phillips 66 has considered getting involved with, but has at least for now passed on because of its profitability or lack of profitability?
We've looked at a number of things. When we started down the path of looking at what we called emerging energies, we had a very wide aperture. And we said, okay, what are all the things that could happen? What could come into play? You know, fuel cells that use hydrogen to transport goods with large trucks and vehicles. And we had a very solid R&D program around fuel cells. And we were looking at, we understood, we had tested them. At the end of the day, though, we realized that there were probably companies out there that would be better positioned to make fuel cells more competitively at a lower cost and more efficiently than we could. And so we stepped back to focus on the things that we really know how to do and how to do well, that we can have a competitive advantage in, that we can do it better than others. Because at the end of the day, everybody benefits when the people that know how to do something really well focus on it and do it really well. You can get lower cost, you can get more efficient, higher reliability. And fuel cells, at the end of the day, we decided we weren't that competitor. So we backed away from that and redirected our resources towards things like renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel. We're very interested in carbon capture. We think carbon capture will be a big part of the solution as we transition to things that won't require carbon capture. But there are companies that are leading cutting-edge companies in carbon capture technologies. We're comfortable, you know, using other people's technologies, you know, pay a licensing fee, buy their equipment, because when you think about something like carbon capture, it's going to be on a massive scale. Everyone is going to have to do some form of it, but let's let the ones that are best at figuring that out, that have a competitive position in that, do that while we focus on what we're really good at. Similarly with hydrogen. We use a lot of hydrogen. We know a lot about transporting hydrogen, storing hydrogen, the challenges around that. And so we support new, greener forms of hydrogen. The challenge around hydrogen is the cost. I mean, water contains hydrogen. You can get hydrogen from water, but you have to put a lot of energy into the water to get the hydrogen out, and that comes at a very high cost. You can get, today we get hydrogen from methane predominantly. If you combine that with carbon capture, then you release that CO2 from methane, capture the hydrogen, but then you can capture the CO2 and sequester it. And that's a very good source, but it's going to add cost. And we have to think about that going forward. But we think that that's a very viable path towards cleaner hydrogen production.
I wanted to jump to the earnings, because obviously that's a big relevant topic Sure. right now. So the first thing I wanted to ask about earnings was kind of around the refining segment. And I know that, you know, we've seen in the last year from 2022 to 2023 some drop in refining earnings. And so I know mostly that's from lower margins, mm-hmm. things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to hear what that looks like from Phillips 66's perspective. Is there a remedy, or was 2022 just a special year? What does that look like for your company?
Ultimately, the value of things like gasoline and diesel and jet fuel are determined by market supply and demand dynamics. And you know, during COVID, globally, I think 4.5 million barrels per day of refining capacity was taken offline permanently. The assets couldn't survive under those conditions. And as the world came out of COVID, as North America came out of COVID, people rediscovered the joy of driving and going on vacation and flying around. And there was a surge in demand, but the supply was much tighter. And so that created the, you know, just classic Econ 101 supply and demand mm-hmm. squeeze that created incredibly attractive margins. We always believe that the cure for high prices is high prices. And through that process, all of the refiners, us including, got better at what we did with our existing assets. And as the economy cooled off a bit, the demand for things like diesel and gasoline came off a bit. You had more EVs coming into the market. So that certainly had an impact on gasoline demand. So, mm-hmm. and so all of those market dynamics are in play. And we watch those all very carefully. But what we focus on most are the things that we control. And we made commitments in November of 2022 to all of our investors. And after spending a lot of time with them, talking to them about what was on their mind about the industry, what they would like to see, and we made some very bold strategic commitments. And in one of those commitments was enhancing the performance of our refining assets. And we've made great progress there. So what you saw and heard in our earnings call really was the result of work that started almost 2 years ago. And we've been going through a business transformation where we've focused on lowering our costs and creating a more competitive mindset in the company and really focusing on just being better at everything that we do across the board. And, you know, there's a whole series of commitments that we've made that we're delivering on. And the interesting thing about the stock market is there's an incubation period where you have to build confidence with investors. And we've been going through that incubation period. We've been delivering more consistent results. We continue to deliver quarter after quarter. We focus on the things that we can control, like operating our assets really well, keeping everyone safe at the end of the day, and being really good marketers, optimizing around those assets through our commercial organization and our value chain optimizers. And at the end of the day, when investors have the confidence that you really do understand how to operate your assets, you really do understand how to create value with those assets, then you see the response in investor interest and share price. And so we're seeing that kind of come into being today.
And then what are you expecting from the refining business in 2024, throughout the next year?
Well, from the refining industry, we continue to see really good market conditions for the things that we produce and fairly tight supply and demand. The world is a volatile place. You can't avoid the impact of things like Russia, Ukraine, things going on in the Middle East. And so those surprises are going to come, and there'll likely be more surprises. And it's a political year as well. So who knows how that will play out. So all of those things will be happening on top of what's already really good, solid fundamentals for the business. And again, we're focusing on the things that we control. All refiners have to take their refineries offline periodically to clean them up, repair things, and bring them back online. Some of our competitors have a very heavy year of that kind of maintenance work. We have a lighter year. So we're pretty well positioned to really capture what's going on out there in the marketplace. And so we're coming into 24 confident in our ability to operate our facilities and to provide the gasoline, distillate, and jet fuel that the world needs. And we're going to bring on this renewable diesel facility in California. We have high expectations for it. It'll produce about 50,000 barrels a day of diesel and jet fuel, and we'll be bringing those to the market as well.
Mark Leisure joining us. Next, where he sees growth in the years ahead when Texas Business Minds continues.
At Texas Mutual, we work vigilantly to investigate and prevent workers' compensation insurance fraud, which has resulted in over $13.5 million in restitution and recoveries for Texas businesses since 2018. Learn how your business is better at texasmutual.com/fraud.
When your business expansion or relocation includes a move to Houston, contact the Spring Branch District. The Spring Branch District is a community offering the kinds of services that help our businesses grow and flourish, including grants for building improvements, 24-hour security patrols, restaurants owned by world-famous chefs, beautiful parks and trails, and easy access to four major freeways. Be a part of the heart of Houston in Spring Branch. Contact us at info@sbmd.org.
Bit more on refining and kind of refining versus chemicals. I wanted to bring up something that you had discussed at the Rice University speech that was not a new concept to the industry, and this idea that gasoline demand, at least globally, is stalling maybe, and there's more growth in transportation alternatives like electric vehicles. And the largest growth for oil and gas in the downstream industry, the largest potential may be in petrochemicals. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if you could elaborate a little bit more on that.
Sure.
And on this idea of adjusting refineries to that demand.
Yeah, well, I think that in North America, I think gasoline demand is kind of flattening out. I think globally, it's still increasing.
Okay.
And so we're well positioned to be able to export into those global markets. So that's part of the solution. Mm-hmm. But we are also preparing for conditions that could require more of the barrel of oil to go into chemicals than go into things like gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. And we're well positioned. We've got large, complex refineries that have flexibility to do things. We've got integration with our joint venture, Chevron Phillips Chemical Company. And one of the things we're doing today is taking material that is produced from mixed waste plastic streams. It goes through a process called pyrolysis, creates a synthetic feedstock that can be processed by refineries into petrochemical feedstocks. And so that's part of the solution. You can imagine someday where we're taking all these mixed waste plastic streams, we're keeping those materials out of landfills, out of the ocean, bringing them back into a refinery, processing them, and producing high quality plastics that aren't degraded like they are in mechanical recycling. This is just like virgin materials coming out, and they're the things that you're used to benefiting from, but everyone is very good and returns them to the right place so they can be part of this circular economy around plastics. And it's, you know, plastics don't belong in the environment. They don't belong in the ocean. They belong in your cupboard. They belong in your car. They belong, you know, we're in a canoe that you can go out and enjoy on the weekend. But we're looking at ways to enhance that circular economy for plastics, and refiners will play a big role in that. But there's also chemistry around how much of a barrel of oil ends up in gasoline and diesel and jet fuel. And we're still going to be processing these barrels of oil. Mm-hmm. And we see demand for jet and diesel persisting better than maybe gasoline will. And I'm talking about long-term, 10, 20, 30 years. And so we can move some of those molecules that would end up in gasoline into petrochemical uses. Mm-hmm. And we believe we're well positioned that way. And when you think about our overall strategy, it starts with providing energy and improving lives. But we want to be the best downstream integrated energy provider in the world. And today, I like to think about employing that strategy in two primary value chains. First of all, we've got businesses. We've got a midstream business. We've got refining. We've got marketing and specialties. And we've got petrochemicals. And those businesses have roles to play in a couple of different primary value chains that we have. So you think about crude oil coming out of the oil fields, coming through pipelines. Midstream does that, delivers it to our refineries where we convert it to useful things for everybody. And those useful things are called refined products that go out to our marketing networks, where you go up, you fill up your tank with gas, diesel, renewable diesel, or it goes to an airport as jet fuel. So that's kind of a wellhead to market value chain in crude oil. Mm-hmm. We can do the same thing in our company for natural gas liquids, because natural gas liquids are also produced in places like the Permian Basin. So we collect and gather those things. We send the natural gas off to be used for energy, for electricity production, or for export as LNG. And then we take this mixture of raw NGLs in our pipeline systems, bring them to these facilities called fractionators that separate them out into higher value, cleaner products. Some of them go into heating like propane and butane, or they're exported into world energy markets, but a lot of them end up as petrochemical feedstocks. The best petrochemical feedstock on the planet today is ethane. And North America has a lot of ethane. That's why you've seen so much polymer capacity, polyethylene capacity added in North America, because that's the best place to start. And so we can see that integration into our domestic petrochemical industry, or again, export into world markets. And so we have that full value chain from wellhead to market, both in crude and as well as in NGLs. Now, crude demand and the products produced from crude oil, the demand is growing very slowly, 1 or 2% a year. On petrochemicals and NGLs, the demand is more like 3 or 4% a year. And so once you have those value chains, it's easy to think about, okay, maybe we can move molecules from the crude value chain over into that chemicals business. So the chemicals business really is important. It can play a part in both of those value chains, and it can evolve over time. So it gives us the flexibility to compete and to reward our shareholders and deliver the products that the world needs for a very long time in the future.
It sounds like with the integration, is there concern of if more resources are being sent to the chemical side, less is being produced in the refining side, or is there space for both with the integration?
There's space for both with integration, and markets ultimately determine that. Today, that's one of the reasons ethane is one of the best molecules to make ethylene and polyethylene from, is because there's really not another use for ethane other than burning it. And so that's why it is the preferred feedstock. Sometimes the economics change a bit and propane's a better feedstock or naphtha's a better feedstock. So really the market determines where all these things land, and the market allocates the best use of these things. So we believe in free markets. We believe that ultimately the market and the consumer determine what's the best use for these things.
I wanted to move over to the Elliott Investment Management letter that was sent. First, I just want to ask if you have an update on how you're working with Elliott to kind of make them happy and make shareholders happy with some of their demands.
You said it right there. Make shareholders happy is what's important. We've got a great reputation of engaging for many years with our shareholders. And when I stepped into this job, the first thing I did was go on a listening tour to listen to all of our shareholders. And Elliott is another shareholder. And so, of course, we're listening to them and engaging with them. And the engagement's been very constructive. We treat them like any other major shareholder. We listen to what they have to say. I haven't talked to them since our earnings call. I assume, like most shareholders, they'd be pleased with what we're doing. Their letter is very important. Their letter was a solid endorsement of those plans that we laid out in 2022, and a solid endorsement of our management team as well. They just made that public statement to add a layer of accountability. And frankly, we welcome the accountability. And I think the results show that.
So I did want to ask briefly, one of the things in the letter from Elliott Investment Management was a little bit of a concern about refining. Maybe Phillips 66 hadn't taken as much advantage of the 2022 and 2023 refining cycles. But I also know that there's this industry knowledge that there's a lot more growth potential maybe in chemicals over refining. So I'm curious how you kind of plan to move forward with balancing those two different businesses.
And I don't think they're mutually exclusive. We can have a fantastic refining business, and we do have a fantastic refining business. Our focus on refining is getting better at what we do every day. The growth in demand is not there in refining that you see in petrochemicals, so it's a different ballgame. We need to focus on running our refineries extraordinarily well. We need to focus on lowering the carbon intensity of what we do, and, you know, perpetuating the ability to provide very secure, affordable, reliable energy from those refineries that has a lower carbon footprint than it had yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so that's focused. And then in the NGO value chain and petrochemicals, the demand is growing at a multiple of GDP. So there's more growth. So we're building more assets through CPChem. They're building assets at Golden Triangle outside of Orange, Texas, as well as in the state of Qatar. And so there is more demand for investment, more demand for growth there. And frankly, we see them not as competing, but as complementary as we move forward. That's the beauty of the assets that we have. We've got diversified assets, but those assets are all also integrated. So we can optimize around all those assets. We can commercially trade around all those assets and use the information we have to create even more value than if you went out and you bought shares in a refining company, a midstream company, and a petrochemicals company. You might be able to build something in a portfolio that looks like us. But the thing you can't do is you can't move molecules between those different value chains and optimize and create more value than you can with just a portfolio of assets. And so that's the beauty of our diversified and integrated portfolio.
I wanted to ask about your divestment strategy, because I know that Phillips 66 has plans for $3 billion of proceeds from asset dispositions in the next year or so. And I was curious, I know that you've said before that the assets that you would consider selling and consider divesting from is going to depend on the market and what other people find, other companies find value in versus what fits in your asset mix.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious if there's different specific types of assets that you would consider non-core that maybe aren't fitting as seamlessly in your asset mix right now.
Well, we take a view and do an analysis around all of our assets, and all of our assets have value. And if those assets have more value to you than they do to me, we've got something to talk about. But I would say that we've got well-defined strategies, those two value chains I talked about, and we have geographies where if you're closer to those geographies, you're more likely to be a core asset. If you're farther from those geographies, you're less likely to be a core asset. But you may have specific competitive attributes that aren't in those geographies that make that a core asset. So we've got internal analysis that has a look at these things, and we're in active discussions with third parties around various assets, but we're not going to comment publicly on all those because it's a competitive discussion. But we've got a very clear line of sight internally on what we intend to do and how we're going to execute that.
Are there any like business segments that you can kind of share that include some of these assets that are in discussions?
Well, I think one of the things we've talked about publicly is we've built a great midstream business, the pipeline systems that we talked about. And we had opportunities to do things as production increased in the Permian Basin. There were lots of opportunities to add assets, and we did it in a very smart way. But not all those assets are under our control. They're in joint ventures. We have non-controlling interests, and those interests that we have may be more valuable to others than they are to us, and they aren't critical to us maintaining the control of the value chains that we want to play in. So that's probably the easiest example. We did some of that when we rolled up our DCP business. We traded off our interest in Gray Oak Pipeline, and then we sold our interest in South Texas Gateway Terminal for those very reasons. It wasn't critical to our strategy. We could take the cash from selling those assets and redeploy it in things that were more critical to our strategy. It's just really swapping assets to really focus on our key strategic elements.
Thanks to Phillips 66 President and CEO Mark Leisure for joining us. And thank you for downloading Texas Business Minds, presented by the Business Journals of Texas. Brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies build a stronger, safer Texas. And by the Spring Branch District. Be a part of the Heart of Houston in Spring Branch.